The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Ms. Chantal Pereira, Country Corporate Marketing and Communications Manager for GMMB. Chantal, welcome.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Jody.
Now, Chantal, I know you would have worked with, helped hundreds, if not thousands of companies in terms of assisting them in their marketing and branding in some form or fashion and throughout the breadth of your resume. So I want to ask, starting off with this, why is branding so important to companies?
Great. So branding is what sets you apart from everybody else. This is what I start off with, right? Branding is not just a visual identity, but it sets you apart. So there's a story, there is content behind that branding, and this is basically what gets you noticed in your market space.
Now, can branding compensate for a mediocre product? Or what if I have a great product, but I have poor branding?
Right. So let's go with that latter part. If you have a fantastic product, right, but poor branding, how are you going to get people to notice you? How are people going to hear about you? How are people going to try you? How are you going to get that product onto the market shelves, right? They have certain standards, obviously, that you have to meet and criteria when it comes to branding and packaging that for you to be able to go there in a commercial level. But even before that, how is anybody going to notice what your product is if you don't have something that stands out visually, makes an impact? Your colors, you know, what your product stands for, what's the USP. You need all these things put together so that you can set yourself apart from others.
You said USP. What do you mean by USP?
Sorry. So your USP is your unique selling property, right? Basically, people use the terms differently, but it's what sets you apart in the most layman's terms. So if your product is, let's say, healthy-based product, it has no artificial dyes, no preservatives, those are the things that you want to convey most to your clients or your customers so that they understand what are the benefits to your product versus another product similar on the market space.
Now, you know, sometimes we create a product and we just think people are going to buy it, but we don't know who exactly is going to buy it. How do I know or figure out who my target audience is then if I have to then create branding to suit that?
Great. So you need to, yes, you need to identify your target audience. And the ways to go about to do that is basically looking at the product or service that you have to offer. Who are likely the people to enjoy your product or service or purchase your product or service, right? So you start by identifying those persons. And this could be through different methods. You can actually do your own market research. You could do one-on-one surveys with persons. You can use social media to create polls. You could have direct feedback when you go out to test your product in markets. For instance, if you were to go to a farmer's market event and you wanted a sample, you would get that sort of feedback. Besides who is going to actually use your product in terms of the consumer side of things, who is also going to purchase your product, right? Because that's also another method. Because not everybody, for instance, if I were to give an example of a children's product that is to be consumed, while you're advertising or you're promoting to a child, the mom or the dad is most likely going to be purchasing for that child, right? So that's one of the things you would have to look at. So defining your demographics, which is basically age, gender, lifestyle, location, and then also what are the interests of persons that would be interested in your product, right? Again, examples of if it's a healthy lifestyle product, those are the types of persons you're going to go after, right? In meaning that you're going to convey your message that this product or service promotes a healthy lifestyle.
Chantal, I know you are experienced with mass media and now digital media. I want to give you something that happened to me, and maybe you could just tell me what's your opinion on this.
Sure.
When I would have launched a product that I had before, it was something that is healthy, and we sold it locally, we put it on supermarket shelves. We weren't sure who the buyer really was. I mean, we just guessed people who want to eat healthy, maybe gym people, mm-hmm. and we put it out. And then when we put it on digital platforms overseas, we realized that there is a subset of people who I didn't even know existed, and that's people who had specific medical illnesses, right?
Right.
But I did not know that this segment existed. They started buying it, and they became my largest market.
Mm-hmm.
How then, what do you feel about using digital tools to assist you with determining who your target market is?
So I think it's a great method, right? Because one, it's of no cost, basically, or a little cost in some cases, right? You could obviously reach a very wide audience. And as you said, you experienced an international audience that you didn't think about when you first launched your product, right? So you probably would have had a primary target in mind, and now you got a secondary target, and your secondary target basically took over from the primary target in that case. So using social media is a quick and easy way to test what clients or consumers like about your product and service, not just from a standpoint of it gives you feedback immediately, but also you can utilize it to gain more market insights in a really easy manner. You can, as I said, you can use polls, you can use questionnaires to share with the audience once you start getting that feedback in. And it's a really uncomplicated way to start that initiative in figuring out what is your target audience.
You know, of course, because I am on radio, I have to now say this as well. we would have had guests that would have come onto the show and spoken about new products that they want to launch, and they would have asked the public what they think, and people would call in and say, hey, I like this idea, or why don't you do this instead? Is that also a good way then that people could try to figure out what people think, or if they would like it, or their opinions?
Of course. So what I'd say is there's no one way you should do things, right? Based on your product and service, you would know what type of reach you want to get. Let's for instance, because you can use both traditional and digital media in a way that would help promote your market, would create awareness for your product or service, will educate and inform, and working hand in hand together would actually bring a bigger awareness to your product. It's something we call about like PR, public relations. You can use media in that form or fashion because it will help, again, just grow the general awareness of your brand or your product or service, and help persons to understand what it's about. You get feedback as well. As I said, you got the calls through radio. It's an engaging form of content through radio as well. So it is another method that you could use to get feedback as well. I mean, there are many tools that you could use to get feedback besides just media. You could go, as I said, your farmer's market. You get one-on-one direct consumer feedback from your client right in front of you when they sample your product, right? Or if you were to host a seminar or webinar, you can get feedback there. So there's many aspects that you could use in your brand communication framework that would help gain further insights and just expand your knowledge on what you need to do in terms of marketing, promotions, your demographics, your psychographics.
Now, when you sometimes, you know, you think about establishing your brand and you're just thinking about the name of your company,
mm-hmm.
or the name of your product, what then are some of the elements of a brand that are overlooked?
Sure. So when you're starting out, you have to build something that I call like the brand's DNA, right? You want to look at what is the brand's mission, its vision, its purpose. And another aspect that I like to add to it is what is its values, right? Because we are a society that we have products or services that have core values that are very dear to us that we also want to be able to convey to our audience. So when you're starting out, and yes, you want to look at, okay, I've created my logo, I know the name of my company, this is what I want to do. Just I would advise to take some time and really deep dive into creating your mission. What is your brand's mission? Clearly communicate what is its purpose. And then go into the vision of what you see your brand to be and what is the overall purpose of your brand. What is the reason for this brand being what it is? What does it stand for? And what are the goals and objectives that you have? And then your values, basically.
You mentioned something there, which is mission. When you sit in a room with your team,
mm-hmm.
and y'all are trying to figure out a strategy,
mm-hmm.
how do you keep the mission of the company at the forefront to then guide the rest of the activities?
Right. So the mission is like almost like a little check book, I would say, a checklist back. So your whole vision of what your company and your mission is set up in a purpose, right? So when you are strategizing to come out with a new campaign, you have to look back and say, okay, is this serving my brand mission? Is this part of my vision? Is this part of my purpose? And you have to tie that back to the core, because at the end of the day, that's your essence of your brand. And you want to make sure that you're truly reflecting that in your story or your campaign or whatever content you may put out. So it is, in a way, checks and balances for you when you're going to start that advertising process, to make sure that you are conveying those true core ethics of your mission, your vision, your values, and your purpose.
You know, you always go to courses and they will teach you that certain colors might mean something to your audience depending on the market that you're within. So when it comes to food, they would say that red invokes the feeling of feeling to eat, and green invokes a feeling of something that is natural. Do you believe that as well?
I don't believe it now. I think before, and based on my former role in a manufacturing organization, there were those discussions around what colors represent, right? I think in the world that we are in now, where everything has been so quickly evolving, the rules are not the rules anymore. I mean, I even heard about somebody saying you can't call something a target market anymore because of a digital space. That's no longer the frame that we can use, right? So I believe that because it's changing so rapidly and so quickly, and the expansion of a million products and services plus, in our world, that you can't use the same rules that you would have 10 years ago. So you shouldn't be bound to what may have worked back then. And I would say to be very open, test it with your market, see their feedback, and make sure that you're on the right path when you're going about that leg of the business.
What if I am in a market that products aren't easily differentiated from one to another? Products are easily substituted one for another.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of people that would come on to the show that produce sauces, pepper sauce.
Right.
And I realize that people are loyal to brands, some, but mm-hmm. for many people, pepper sauce might also be easily substituted one for another, unless there is something special tasting or unique ingredient in your sauce.
Right.
So then, how do people differentiate themselves in a situation where your product is easily substituted for another?
Sure. So in your example, pepper sauce, I totally get that, right? Because it's one of those things that is specific to taste, right? It is something that enhances the flavor of the food. It is something that people like to use with their meals or locally in chow, things like that. So what would differentiate something like that versus another? There are many things, right? From a packaging standpoint, how do you stand out with your packaging, the name of your product? You don't want to just be the name pepper sauce, right? You have to stand out in a way. So you have to figure out a clever way to make that name resonate with the audience that you are trying to serve. So very funny example, the Bamsi Blaster was a very funny example of how that pepper sauce stood out amongst others, right? Now I don't know in terms of his taste and his profile, I can't speak to that, but it was just one of those things that would have gravitated and exploded on social media because of that name being so funny, humorous, and people would have been talking about it, right? So obviously they would have grown awareness from that aspect. So again, in my former life, I would have served in a manufacturing where it was a very, very mass commodity, and it was about packaging, it was about price, it was about the display, it was about how the packaging worked. In terms of the consumer's hand, the feel, etc. So there's a number of aspects within your product that you have to look at to make sure that you're serving your audience as best. So that you see that special USP, I talked about a unique selling proposition. Basically, that is what is going to help you stand out. So what is the best characteristic of your product that people really love or speak to you about and say, wow, this is amazing? You're going to use that to help pivot that product to make sure that it stands out. So that would be one of the examples that I would use on how to help differentiate yourself amongst the same crowd.
You know, every time I go to the supermarket and I have my son with me, he stops at the shelf that has these snacks that have these toys. You know, so you know there are these snacks like normal jelly beans, but it's in some sort of a hand that you could press and
Yes.
it moves. Or is that kind of what you're talking about,
All right.
making a, something stand out?
Yes. So instead of it being in a clear plastic, type of bag, that organization would have been like, kids are my main market, right? Kids gonna eat jelly beans, they're gonna eat candy, etc. Why not give them something that they're gonna remember? They're gonna have fun enjoying, consuming the product in a fun, unique way instead of just picking it up from a bag and putting it in their mouth, right? They have the ones with the little characters. I think if you remember Pez from back in the day where it distributed the little candy out the mouth of the character. Again, they would have come up with unique packaging opportunities to have a more enjoyable experience or better client experience with that product. So those are some of the unique ways that you can look at how could I change up my packaging or do something different that really makes me stand out from the crowd, but also gives me a more enjoyable experience as a consumer.
You know, you and I spoke yesterday, and on this, you brought up the packaging that is done by Ram Sarans in the
Yes.
cartons. What do you think about that?
Right. So Sarans is one of those products that have been around for ages, right? So I think it was the 40s. I think he started off with his dairy farm. And that nostalgic package is still something that stands out on a shelf, right? Because it is that piece of yesteryear that people gravitated or people would have grown up with, right? So from a perspective of that milk carton or that white carton standing out versus a bottle, you would know that's Ram Sarans in a nutshell, right? Because you identify with that product. So what they did is they built brand loyalty over time through this piece of packaging, basically that everybody could identify that it was Ram Sarans. So the same would go for Coca-Cola. They would also have a specific piece of packaging. Remember the Coke bottle that was unique only to them, right? And if you broke it into a million pieces, it was still a Coca-Cola bottle. Some of these companies and organizations have learned how to make their packaging so unique to them, build that brand loyalty and that awareness, and that identifies them off a shelf immediately. And that's some of the ways that, really makes you stand out.
What about this? Can packaging and branding improve the perception of the taste of the item that you're consuming?
Okay. I don't know if it can improve the taste per se, but it'll get you to try it, right? So if you have a really well-packaged product and you see it on the shelf and it's launched, it's done a lovely campaign, persons are talking about it, persons are interested in about it, they look on the shelf and they see it and they're like, wow, look at this product. It's so beautiful. I need to try it. It creates that awareness and education part and the trial part of that client customer journey, right? People could love it for that, And be okay with the taste being what it is, meaning like if it was, you know, just all right and not an outstanding one, if the price point was okay as well, people would be able to, you know, live with it or consume it, right? They have some instances like that where the packaging has really pushed a product out in front because it stood out so well amongst its competitors.
Now, you brought up something there, the customer journey, I think you said.
Yes.
When it comes to food, there's an emergence, especially within the natural or cottage food industry, that the customer journey, the company telling a story about their product, has become very important. What's your opinion on that?
I actually think it's a great tool and method and way of creating again brand loyalty, increasing your brand awareness, because we are all humans. We love to hear a good story. We are naturally all storytellers, especially, I think, especially Trinidadians, so much like we love to tell a story. So to find out that your favorite product has this fantastic story behind it will only just push that product forward and set you apart from the others. And you could do that in so many fun ways as well, in how you tell that story and how you convey that story to your audience.
Yeah, you know, 'cause like we had a guest on the show from Barbados. The company was Ulu Foods, and she does a range of breadfruit items. And she was telling the story that they came to Barbados 'cause her husband was working there, and during COVID they could not get gluten-free foods. But she had this breadfruit tree in the backyard from the house that they were renting, and she never ate it before. And ulu, of course, is a Hawaiian word for breadfruit, or Polynesian word for breadfruit. And so she just decided, because I can't go to the grocery and find these gluten-free items, I'm going to pick this and make things with it. And through that, then she launched the company Ulu Foods. I know people call and they were asking about this story, this experience, and they were so eager to hear about it. You know, I think storytelling really is pushing the food industry forward. Can you think then of any local companies that you have seen that have done the storytelling or the branding very well?
Sure. So, I mean, there are a couple that come to mind, but just a more recent one, Farm and Function. They have a really great healthy product. It's preservative free. Their packaging stands out. It's a bright blue. They have the image of the fruit, you know, like the fresh cut fruit on the top. They advertise that it is, you know, preservative free and it's clean, it's healthy, and all of that. And the packaging is really easy to use and consume. That the frozen fruits and the mix that they have, right? And they have various forms of it, meaning that they have wide options. So that packaging really stood out to me when it launched. I remember specifically looking, I think it was in PriceSmart at one point in time, and being like, oh, is this a new international product? I didn't know at that time, this was years ago, that it was a locally produced product. And then I found out it was actually somebody I knew, you know, and they a couple that did it together. And when I heard their story, I was like, wow, this is even more amazing, you know, just to find out that how they started and why they started. And again, just like your example, right? The Hulu product, she had a need that she couldn't have fulfilled. So she created her own. That to me is amazing. That means that you decided right then and there that if I couldn't find it on the shelf, I'm gonna create my own. And because she created her own, she had an audience that also had the same need that she may not have been aware about in terms of the size of the audience and all of that. That then also said, wow, somebody else thought of this, created this product so that I could also enjoy these gluten-free items as well, right? So I would say like Farm and Function to me is one of those that really stood out. And I'm going back to Ram's Ranch, right? Just because of a local nostalgic piece of their story, which was again how Mr. Ramsarman would have started with his pasteurized farm, and then he eventually decided that he was going to expand into the fruit drinks as well. And they have been around, I mean, for years. So it's just one of those things that when you really have that behind it, it's something you need to come forward with, right? You need to just have that messaging about how this brand started. What's the story behind it? You know, is it a family-owned brand? Was it a special need that was created? Those are the things that are really going to bring and build on brand loyalty.
But then, you know, how do I want to come back to the example of pepper sauce. How do I figure out what aspects to promote about my product, what people want to hear then that would make them buy it? How do I figure that out?
That's a good question, right? So, depending on your product itself. So, let's say you came up with a pepper sauce that is a pocket-sized pepper sauce. Let's just throwing this out there that I could take with me to my dinner, my lunch, I take to work. So, it's a unique packaging that you've just created because you want to get this best tasting pepper sauce, but you don't want to have to tote this large bottle with you. Right, so that may be something that you want to obviously identify and let your clients know, your customers know that, okay, I've created this new size of pepper sauce, so it's really easy, it's convenient to carry around, and also the price point is like fabulous as well. Those are some of the things that I would look at and identify and say, okay, this is why clients need to know about it. From another example with the pepper sauce, if you created a pepper sauce that was not just a basic pepper sauce but had an added value flavor to it. So if it's a pineapple pepper sauce, I'm just throwing out again, scorpion pepper sauce, we know that that's a very popular one, but has a hint of lime, let's say, that added value of that taste of the lime is what you would want to then convey to persons because it makes it different from another pepper sauce on the shelf, right? So you have to look at those things. And also to when you are doing your product, test it with your family, your friends, your community to get that feedback on why they love this product, what they think is so special about this product, what they think other people would love about that product. That consumer insights is what we call. That is really your gold mine into telling you how to convey those special things about your product to your mass audience when you decide to then go on to that next step.
It is, sir. I'm thinking of a situation where non-branding became the branding, and hear me out. There are these plantain chips that are sold throughout the country, and they've traditionally been sold in a clear bag with a small little label with just the name of the company and maybe a couple of ingredients, and that's it. And there are the others on the flip side that are very commercial, beautiful packaging, full print bags. But the sim I noticed that the company that would have done the clear bags with just a small label started doing a print on a small clear bag to mimic what the label used to be. That's that sticker label. And I think that people have flocked towards that simple package then without a lot of information because it's nostalgic. It gave that home non-commercial feel, and that then became like the brand itself. What do you think about that?
So when it comes to food products, especially, Jody, people want to see more than not what they're eating, right? Unless it's a product that's been around ages and they're okay with that. So in terms of the plantain chips, I think what worked for them is, yeah, they had the simplest form of packaging, but it was still their brand because they were known as the clear packaged plantain chips, right? They sold on the highways, they sold in moms and pops, they sold all over. And I guess in terms of the client deciding that, you know what, I'm gonna step it up with the print and all of that, he still kept the clear packaging, so he still kept that brand identifier that he would have started out with, which is great because that's what sets him apart from the others, which have full foil wraps or full print wraps that you can't actually see inside of the packaging, but you see this beautiful design and logo on the outside. So he set himself apart from the get-go with his clear packaging, and then he probably just wanted to one-up it in terms of his brand now being noticed. Versus, oh, let me just get the bag with the clear bag of plantain chips. Versus, let me get Mr. Smith's plantain chips, you know, the name. So maybe that's what would have happened in that case. Of course, I'm just seeing it as a scenario, but he still has his own brand, and his brand is pretty strong.
there's a fierce loyalty of some people towards some brands, that
yes.
those brands are, you know, they support it because of the brand. Something could go wrong and they'd still back it up. So is that one of the strengths then of a good brand?
Yes. Building brand loyalty is what you want to do in any business or organization, right? Building your community around loving your brand, right? Referring your brand to others, and that grows your brand and that creates more loyalty, right? So when you do build up and you do take the time to build up that brand loyalty, when something were to happen, you would still have people in your corner, let's just say. You would still have people saying, you know, I've used this brand for 40 years, I've never had an issue, XYZ. So you want that brand loyalty and that brand advocacy persons to stand up and really defend you if something were to happen later on, you know?
You know, and here's one of the things about the digital media. Years ago, before social media, if somebody was upset with the company, they would call into the company and quarrel and complain and give you an earful and kind of move on. Now, when somebody is upset with the company, what they say, I'm going to go on social media and blast you. And
right.
it's like an immediate outrage to then try to crush a company. So consumer reactions are different.
Yes.
How then, or do you tell companies to create crisis management situations to protect their brands?
Yes, that is one of the key elements when you are in an organization, right? Especially if you have a product that persons are consuming or using daily. You definitely want to create your crisis communication plan. And in that plan, you want to identify some of the things that may go wrong, right? Why you need to do that is because you need to actually work through scenarios, right? For instance, you would have remembered they would have had several U.S. products that would have had like listeria outbreaks, etc., right? Those products would have been on the shelves for years. People would have been using them, consuming them, and then something would have happened in that case where they had a listeria product or an E. coli outbreak or whatever the case may be. And they would have to recall the products on the shelves immediately. So that company would then now have to put out communications to say, hey, we are going to recall these products because we want to ensure that we have our safety of our consumers at heart. We know that we want to protect them. We are going to voluntarily recall all these items, pull them off the shelves, and we're also going to, some persons also open hotlines for persons to call in if they were affected by, you know, consuming that product. So in your crisis communication plans, you have to identify what the different scenarios would be or could be. You have to set up your communication plan to also tailor to those things. You also have to set up who your crisis community is going to be within that organization. So if it's your marketing person, your PR person, if it's the CEO, who is going to speak to the external forces that may inquire about this, whether it be the media, whether it be your clients, and how are you going to manage if that were to happen, all that noise that's just going to come at you, you know, very quickly. In that plan, you want to make sure that you have all the steps and processes identified, and it is, you know, in your handbook then as a business owner, to make sure that you're really truly trying to capture everything that would help you in a situation like that. And then you could also lean on you know, using third parties if you need to, whether it's an advertising agency or a trusted consultant or somebody in PR and communications that could help you in that sort of scenario to help you navigate through that process as well.
Okay. You know, when we come back, I want to keep on this crisis topic a little bit. I need to run
sure.
a quick commercial break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
No problem.
And now we return to Agribusiness Innovations with Mr. Jody White and Chantel Pereira. Jody, can you hear me?
Oh, yes, sorry about that. So, you know, one of the most famous examples that we have right now being taught in pretty much every marketing class is that of a bear company that used an influencer that was not well received by their traditional demographic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is something that I don't know how you plan for that. But then how do you make sure that you don't make those mistakes?
Well, again, in terms of your planning to use collaborations, influencers, etc., you have to use it to test it out with your audience, right? To see what they love, what their interests are. Do they align with that person's interests? Does that person have the same core values as your organization? Is that somebody who can represent you? It's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of questions that have to be asked when you go into something like that. I can't speak to the company you're referring to, but I can speak in general where for us, even at our organization, when we decided that that's something that we would like to use, we asked a lot of questions. And we have specific core values and a vision that we use that we have to make sure that aligns with anybody collaborating with us, right? So you really have to sit down and assess your business, your organization, and how that person or that collaborator or that partnership could help add value. And once it's adding value to your business and your audience, then great, that you've done a great job. If it's not adding, then you have to reassess. You have to monitor, you have to get feedback, and you have to decide moving forward if that's something you're going to continue with, or it's something you're going to adjust maybe, or if it's something you're not going to do anymore. You know, so it's evolving.
You think that then throughout the campaign creation, then the marketing campaigns, that consistently the teams should look back at the mission statement over yes. and over and over to make sure that they're hitting that target and not off topic?
Correct. So again, what is your core? What does that speak to? Your values? You make sure that's inherent in your campaigns, in your marketing communications, in your content. Because at the end of the day, that is you. That is your unique identifier in your business and in your organization. And you want to be true to that. So you want to make sure that that's being conveyed very well across any campaign or content that you may put out.
No. Companies then, small companies that are, let's just say agro processors. You want to come out, you want to come something new, you have a product you want to launch then. Do you have like a checklist of things they should be considering when trying to create their brand?
So simply, they could create what I would call like a brand toolkit, basically, which would encompass already a lot of what we discussed. So your mission, your visions, your values, your target audience, your visual identity, what is your brand, the color scheme, the tone. But there's more. There's brand persona. How is your brand going to be conveyed to your audience? What is the tone, the feel? You know, is your brand personality going to shine through? There's a few things like that. You have that brand toolkit and that and the story that you want to come across. In terms of your packaging as well, and your logo, you know, you're going to have like, you create your brand guidelines. This is how my brand logo is going to be represented across various mediums, not just packaging, but if you were to print in a newspaper versus a billboard, if you print on black or white versus color, things like that. So you have certain things that you have to put together basically to create that brand toolkit that you would be using in your organization to really make sure that you have a checklist that you can use and go back to, right? Yeah, basically.
Let's say I got it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that I didn't have the money, or I didn't have the knowledge, I didn't have the experience, and I want to rebrand. I want to come out looking better or different. Is that something that companies can successfully do?
Of course, companies have been rebranding since forever. I mean, let's just look at people. People rebrand themselves all the time. Madonna is a clear example of that, right? Companies can always rebrand themselves. They can change up their look, their type of packaging. They can change up their campaigns. They could change up anything about them, but they might keep their core logo the same. So that, again, that's one identifier that you'll know it's the same company, but you're transforming yourself. So, for instance, Walmart would have had a particular logo that they would have then changed or evolutionized over years, right? They would have kept the same color scheme, but the little, I don't know if it's a Starburst, I'm not sure, Jody, don't kill me, right? The little Starburst on the side is what is now then versus then, you know, KFC. Look, it used to be Kentucky Fried Chicken, and now it's KFC, right? Because that's what people used to call it. So they decided that the logo needed to change to reflect those things that the consumers were speaking about that. And that's where, like, again, your feedback, your insights are really important. But they would have kept the Colonel's image as their core identifier. Even locally, Carib would have rebranded themselves over the years. And you know that blue and gold is still there, but the look and feel would have changed over so many years, right? Even Stag would have been one of those from a rebranding perspective. So we have a lot of great examples locally of brands reinventing themselves or rebranding themselves to really better serve their audience.
What about rebranding the use? And you know, in all marketing classes, what's your most famous example? An energy drink that was designed for old people, and then they realized that the younger sport audience were the ones that would buy it more, and now they're a massive sports drink. Mm-hmm. Is that something that people should always keep their eyes open for, those opportunities?
Yes, for sure, because they always are secondary target audiences or secondary uses out of a product that could, as you said, it was set out in one way. So they had a need that they set out and said, you know what, I'm going to help the elderly markets boost up their energy so that they can feel more alive, that they can go and do the things that they love to do. But it turned out that the sport athletes also needed that. Young persons also needed that so that they could achieve whatever objectives they had in terms of sports, etc. So just looking at something simple as baking soda, right? Baking soda's properties would have started out maybe in a cooking sense, but then it came to a cleaning sense. And now Arm & Hammer has that as one of its added on benefits in all its products. This baking soda is this tried and true cleaning agent that really helps get things clean. So they would have now created, not just from a food perspective of we have this that's used in all households, but now we have branched out into cleaning products using this raw resource that we had originally and creating now a new product. So you always have to keep an eye out for any opportunities like that where you could really expand your business and your brand into things that may not have started out originally in serving its client's purpose, but came on eventually through feedback, through insights. And that is really what gives that drive to create more opportunities within a market space.
You know, that is a in one of the companies that we have, we identified a new product, and on it we said breakfast. And people would only consume it for breakfast, even mm-hmm. though it's you could consume food anytime, right? There's no reason that something could be. But because it says breakfast and the brand says breakfast, people will only have it for breakfast. And if you say, you know, you can eat it for other than breakfast, well, I can really eat it other times. But it's because you made the stupid mistake of putting breakfast. We limited ourselves mm-hmm. to being just a breakfast food, and we missed all the other meals for the whole day. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I guess those are some of the lessons that I guess
the learnings. That we are. Yes. Correct. Yeah, I get that. And you would have seen that through insights and through feedback, that persons would be like, I don't only want to consume this at breakfast time. I want to have it for lunch or dinner as a snack. And therefore, you would have been like, oh, okay, yeah, this makes sense now. So it is a learning curve, especially with smaller businesses, entrepreneurs that may not have all the resources available to them. They may not have all the experience in the world. But what I would say is don't be scared to try and really have as much presence around you that you can really lean on for insights and feedback. And if you don't have that direct communication, reach out. You know, reach out and network with persons like yourselves that are starting what you're doing in terms of I'm an entrepreneur. I want to start my business. I want to create this product or service. How do I go about doing this? You could also have educational opportunities available to you locally, internationally, to just get yourself more familiarized with what are the processes, what are the steps, how could I go about this, you know, in a like less stressful way. It's going to be stressful, but, you know, how could I really open up myself to the learnings and the education of persons who may have gone through this before so that I don't feel so overwhelmed, I guess.
I had the next thing. You brought up something that I'm starting to wonder. For small companies especially, is there a difference or a separation between company brand and personal brand? And I'm going to go further and say that.
Mm-hmm.
Do people know you're the owner of a company and go on your Facebook page and see what you're writing about whatever topics?
So I would say, especially in these times with digital and social media, right? Most persons would know who the owner of a business is, or who have an idea at least about the business. So there's a couple of things. I don't want to say you separate yourself from your business, but usually how it does start out is the owner and the business are seen together, right? Because the owner has a story to tell, just as we discussed with like Hulu, right? She has a story to tell. This is her need. She has this great reason. She's helped out other persons in the market. So really and truly, your brand and your company ties into each other. And once your core values align with your business, which it should, because it's your brand, it's an extension of you, basically. Your organization, your company is an extension of you, because this is what you wanted. This is what you saw an opportunity to do. So you're going to be tied to it. Whether you want to promote yourself in that space to be that face for your brand or that spokesperson for your brand is another story, but that's up to the individuals, right? Whether they're comfortable to do that or not, or whether they, you know, are not shy by cameras, etc. But it does really go hand in hand, because at the end of the day, this is what you started out to do. This is what you saw a need and an opportunity for, and you wanted this, right? So I would say that you really can't separate it too much in a small business sense, but it's all up to the individual how they want to portray their organization and their company.
You know, when I got into business, it was 2010, and I remember one of my clients added me personally on Facebook, and that was the early days of Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And I was critical of a topic. And he called me and said, listen, you're new in business. Be very careful what you say. All eyes are going to be on you, especially even if you don't know they're on you. People are watching, and people will form an opinion of you and your company. So be very careful what you align yourself to. And since then, I have tried to maintain a neutral personal brand,
mm-hmm.
because of me being in business, and I think mm-hmm. that helps.
Well,
that's
yes.
just my kind of two cents there.
Yeah, of course. In this day and age, you have to be very wary of what you see, what you put out there, right? Persons may not think when they do a video on Facebook or when they comment, right? Like, let's say, for instance, they comment on a story and somebody sees that and shares it and goes, you know, this is the owner of so-and-so. People are going to know. So in this day and age of social media where everything is blasted out in 2 seconds, you have to be very mindful of what you say, how you conduct yourself, how you're seen. And again, just say, you know, in your thoughts, is this worth it to put out this comment or statement at this time? Is it something I truly believe in? Is it going to make a difference, or is it going to harm? Those are some of the things you have to think about before you maybe like with impulse you respond to something. And same goes with like emails as well, right? Before you respond to something, I always say you need to take a few minutes, think about it, think about the response, your response, think about how the person's going to respond to you as well. Is it going to be conveyed in a manner that you think is what you're trying to say, so that you don't basically upset the apple cart?
Here's what I'm getting for you after this hour.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you're telling me that my approach to branding can't be wake up in the morning and what I feel to put out, I feel. It feels as if I have to really plan and be be thoughtful, thorough,
mindful.
Mindful.
Correct.
So then do you approach branding in such a way whereby you come up with a strategy and execute over a period of time? Is that what you're saying we need to do?
Yeah, because remember, you're going to have to be doing research. You're going to have to identify what's unique about your product. You're going to have to identify what your target audience. So it is a process. While you say, like, some entrepreneurs can wake up one day and say, okay, I don't have any gluten-free products. I'm sure she didn't do it overnight. She must have really thought about it and really researched and said, you know what, where in this market space could I fit? Who would I be serving? How would they get to know me? What should I look like? What should my name be? Is it going to stay true to me and my core values? What is my mission, my vision? So it is a process. It's not something that can happen overnight. And it's something I think everyone should take with grace. You're not going to come out the woodworks 100% usually in the business. If you do, then great. Kudos to you. But it is a learning process as well, because remember, consumerism changes daily, monthly, yearly. Everybody's needs are different. Markets are expanding. Businesses are opening up all over the world. What we would have done before COVID is not what we do now. So you have to also look at, you know, trends, opportunities, and really take that all into one space and work with those things. And again, monitor feedback, how's it going, review, revise as you go along. It's not a one standard playbook that you can use. It's what can work for you, your business, and your products, right? And how you feel about those at the end of the day. And once you feel that your products are really serving its purpose, customers are talking about it, they're referring it, that is the best form of marketing. I can't tell you, the word of mouth referrals, that is the best form of marketing. Once you're getting all of those things, you know that you're on the right path, right? And you can tweak as you go along. And yes, you will have mistakes. Yes, you will have blunders, and you learn from them and you grow. And the more you grow, the more you expand your knowledge base, and the better you can then, you know, help out another person in that same space.
This brings us just about to the hour of 11. And I think that you would have done an excellent job in kind of giving us an insight in the mind of someone who does branding professionally. So we appreciate you being here. Do you have any platform that you use to give tips or insights or articles on branding that people could come and view, or you have plans on setting up something?
So I do have my LinkedIn personal page, which you can find me under Chantal Pereira. I have started putting out some content regarding branding you as well as branding your organization. But I do have some future plans to discuss more of these topics, because I realize, again, that persons are not 100% sure of the process, and they would like to, you know, just hear from somebody else who's already gone through it, just to feel a little bit better about the process and, you know, learn a little bit as they go along. So I will be hopefully putting out some new content soon in that regard.
Thank you very much for your time with us here on Freedom 1.5 FM. To our listeners,
the best insight, instant feedback, accountability, the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.